Fourth and final hour. Darren, Donnick, and Jace live at Pete and Terry's Tavern. Predators and Oilers tonight. 7 o'clock puck drop. Pregame starting at 6 and everything heard. Right here on 102.5 The Game. Special night over at Nissan Stadium. Almost 60,000 in attendance. Nashville SC hosting Atlanta United. And Mike Jacobs is on the line with us, general manager of Nashville SC. Mike, how you doing?
Good, guys. How are you doing?
Well, minus the outcome of the game, even though you were playing a really, really good opponent, I have to believe you guys are all smiles today.
Yeah, you know, it was a great night for the club and for the city in general. And, you know, I think a lot of times when you look at expansion teams in all sports, when you try to measure how they're doing, you know, you look at the fact that it's really a new group playing against all these existing teams. And, you know, for us to have only 6 weeks of preseason under our belt against, you know, arguably like a glamour team in Major League Soccer in Atlanta, you know, and to kind of stay toe-to-toe with them like a heavyweight prize fight, I think we were pretty happy with how things went.
And the players certainly expressed how much they loved the atmosphere. The game is on national television. I mean, it was just the perfect storm to kick off, you know, the inaugural season and the first. You only get one crack at a first, and that was your first ever game in MLS. It happened to be a home game with a great crowd and on national television. So, I mean, just everything came together. Like I said, an exciting game, too. I mean, you know, I know you fell 2-1, but that Atlanta team is really, really good. And I thought for what you guys are trying to do moving forward, you have to be encouraged by the makeup of this roster.
Look, I mentioned obviously how great a night it was for everyone involved. You know, for me, I could tell you, you know, I'm a terrible loser, and I hope that's always the case for myself as well as our players and coaches and support staff. And you know, we're never going to be satisfied with a game that didn't end with us, you know, getting 3 points and a win. But you know, I think we saw some encouraging signs for this young group coming together, and I think for you know what the events, you know, what it represented. To have close to 60,000 fans there at Nissan Stadium, you know, I think it showed the soccer here in the city.
So let's talk about the makeup of this roster. Certainly got everybody's attention with Walker Zimmerman, and of course he's going to be a trivia question down the road. First ever goal, you know, in Nashville SC history, and he'll be the answer to that trivia question. Let's talk about the roster that's been put together moving forward for Gary Smith, head coach. What do you make, and how different is this level than what we've been accustomed to the last 2 years, Mike, in USL?
You know, no disrespect to the USL or to the players and teams previously, but, you know, it's just a totally different level, and it would be the equivalent of trying to watch a Major League Baseball team, a AAA team, or an NFL team, or an XFL team. It's not bad or good. It's just very, very different. And, you know, I had a number of fans or friends who used to watch us in USL just talked about how much faster the pace of the game was, on Saturday night, how much more athletic the players were. You know, it's just very, very different. And, you know, I think it's encouraging for us to see how our players assimilated so quickly under that kind of setting. And, you know, especially for some of those guys like Alan Witter came into the game or Daniel Rios came into the game, you know, who kind of cut their teeth with us here in our USL team.
Mike, we were just talking about a questionable call that a lot of people were talking about in the hockey game on the same night that you guys played. And, I know this isn't the centerpiece because this is just the beginning, but there was a call, the go-ahead goal, which turned out to be the winning goal for Atlanta. There seemed to be confusion about the flag going up. Did you get clarification about that? And how do you go forward? What's the process like as you try to sort all of that out?
Well, first off, look, at the end of the day, you know, we can't be in situations where we're leaving things up to, you know, other parties like the official. You know, for us, regardless of whether the assistant referee or linesman had their flag up and the ref didn't acknowledge it or not, regardless whether the interpretation was that, I guess, a ball came off one of our players that made the person who received the ball not being in an offside position, regardless of whether any of things happened or not, you know, it's up to us to make sure we kind of play through the whistle and, you know, and make sure we do what's right in our end, not leaving anything up to chance.
One thing that I didn't see the game start to finish, but one thing that seemed like a really encouraging sign for your team was that, you know, I kind of envision, okay, here comes Atlanta. They're one of the favorites in the league. They are established. They've won a championship. And I thought maybe, okay, Nashville is going to be trying to hold them off and they will be on the defensive. They won't get a whole lot of shots, and maybe they try to eke out a 1-0 win. But it seemed like you guys really limited their offensive chances and got a whole lot of pretty good looks at the net there. Were you pleased with, from a possession standpoint, what you guys were able to accomplish?
Absolutely. I think teams who are fans who are used to watching Gary's teams here with our USL team, you know, appreciate how dogged the teams were always defensively. You know, the things that were really limited and landed only two clear scoring chances during the match was really encouraging. We had more shots than them, more clear scoring chances. You think like expected goals. And, you know, I think for us to be able to do that while limiting a team that really is as high-powered an offense as there is in our league, you know, I think was really exciting for us to see, you know, so early in the season.
Mike Jacobs is with us. He's the general manager of Nashville SC. And before we look ahead to Portland, I know, and you mentioned watching Gary Smith teams with the USL. We had Taylor Twellman on from ESPN on Friday, and he kind of gave his thoughts on Gary and his evolution from, you know, the days of when he won the MLS Cup and now coming back up through USL and here with MLS. What has it been like for you the last 2-3 years being able to work side by side, and now you both have been elevated to the MLS side to be able to stay together and work together?
Well, I'm sure people have seen it with the NFL and NHL teams that come in here to play against the Predators and Titans, as well as those teams. And you know, ultimately, I mean, if the relationship between your head coach and general manager, if it's not really good, you're not going to succeed, because they've got to work together in identifying players, finding players that fit the coach's system. And I think the fact that Gary and I have this level of experience now together, you know, we both were MLS previously with him in Colorado and myself in Kansas City. But for us to spend these last 2 years working together in USL, I think that not only forged a relationship on and off the field, but I think we have a good understanding of what we need to be successful here. And you know, I think Gary's own growth as a coach, I think where his Colorado teams unfairly were kind of labeled like these ultra-defensive teams, I think you know, Gary's as organized a coach as you'll find, from the standpoint of getting his team to be able to limit the other team's strengths while also maximizing the things that we do well. And I think, you know, he executed that perfectly this weekend.
What have you seen through camp and now the first game? Matt Pickens, fans know him as the goalkeeper for the USL squad. Now he's the goalkeeper coach for MLS. He's kind of made that transition. What have you seen out of him?
Matt's got a bright future as a coach, and it's kind of funny because, you know, he was kind of like the seasoned veteran, you know, as a player in USL. Now he's a young, inexperienced rookie as a coach, you know. So to see, you know, his growth socially, as far as how he continues kind of evolve into not the coach he's going to be, but the person he's going to be in this group, I think Matt's got a lot of promise from the standpoint that he's got a lot of respect from the guys who are here. I think his experience he's had as a player is going to serve him well as a coach. I just think he's got a bright future, I think, in his profession.
So Portland coming up this weekend, first road game in team history, but the second overall game. What are you expecting when you guys go on the road to Portland?
Well, we got no favors with our schedule. I mean, it was almost like welcome to MLS. You can open up against one of the best scoring teams in the league, and you can go on a road in one of the hardest places to play in the league in Portland. So if fans are looking for an easy one, it's not coming up here anytime soon. So, you know, Portland's a very hard place to play. Their fans are as raucous as there is in the league. They almost always sell out, and it creates a really unique atmosphere for people to watch on TV. You know, for us, I think it helps where we are a young team as an expansion group. It helps having so many seasoned veterans, guys with experience in our league, guys have been to Portland before, and hopefully they can deal with the rigors of playing a tough team like that away.
And what does that say about MLS, though, as they continue to add teams like Nashville SC, but they're able to, with the expansion rules, I mean, you guys are able to be competitive from day one, and I think that that's what they wanted as a league. It's not like the old days, like when the Predators got here in the NHL, that, you know, it took them a few years to actually build a competitive roster. You guys have a fighting chance from day one.
Look, we certainly appreciate the opportunity we have. I don't know that it's an advantage expansion teams have. And the reality is, out of recent memory with teams like Atlanta and LAFC, most expansion teams do not do well in their first year. You know, so for us, I mean, I think the fact that we've been so competitive, I think a lot of credit has to go to our coaching staff and the players we have to be able to already kind of find a little cohesiveness so early on in our season. But, you know, it's going to be a challenge in year one for any expansion team, and for us it's no different.
Last thing, Mike, a big event like that in Nissan Stadium, that's obviously a lot – excuse me as I get choked up. your home games previously, you know, 10,000, and now we're talking about, you know, six times what you've been accustomed to. How did everything go? You know, did you, your feedback you get from the fans, was everything, you know, run smoothly, whether it's parking, getting into the stadium, concessions? What was some of the feedback you got from the fans?
You know, from an operations standpoint, I thought it was great how seamless it was made for fans to be able to get to their seats and enjoy the game. When the lights went on, you could see there was a great show that was involved in and around the game. You know, the fan support we got in USL, I think it showed the potential that you had in this market here. I think when you look at when the Predators first came to town, when the Titans first came to town, I think you see that there's a willingness of fans that want to kind of jump on board and take a level of appreciation of having, you know, their own team here in town. And, you know, the idea of seeing a game in front of a crowd that large, I think it makes people appreciate the fact that, you know, that soccer has arrived here, and not just from the standpoint of having a team in a Major League Soccer franchise, but, you know, to have a team that can be successful here as far as one the fans want to watch. And I tell you, it was so humbling coming into the stadium. The number of cars I drove past with NFC stickers on the car, people wearing gold jerseys, even out afterwards, going to a restaurant after the game, people wearing a Nashville FC scarf or gold jerseys. It's pretty humbling to kind of see this all kind of come to fruition here in Nashville.
Well, let me tell you, the three of us were downtown. We saw it because we were leaving here right as everybody had already left Nissan Stadium, and so kind of both fan bases were colliding downtown, and it was quite the spectacle. It was quite the scene to really see, you know, people making their way across the pedestrian bridge and into downtown where they had parked, and like you said, all the stuff, whether it's scarves or flags and hats and everybody decked out in their gold. So really cool scene downtown on Saturday night. Mike, we appreciate the visit. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks, guys.
Mike Jacobs, general manager of Nashville SC. We'll come back and discuss a little bit more about what took place at Nissan Stadium. On the other side, Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5, The Game. Donick and Chase on this Monday afternoon. So when speaking with Robbie Stanley and Alex Apple this morning on Morning Drive for my Monday hits at 9, we talked a little bit about the scene on Saturday night and the 59,000, and I think it's great. And I said when speaking with those guys, I don't want to be the Baby Ruth in the punch bowl. I don't want to be Debbie Downer. I don't want this to come across the wrong way, but I do think it's fair, and it's, you know, it's okay to ask this question. It's not going to be 59,000 every game.
Right.
It was the first, and that's great. And the first was a home run, and everybody is excited and should be excited and should be proud of what took place downtown here on Saturday evening. But what is it going to be like? I said, but I want to know what it's going to look like night in and night out, like home game, you know, in May,
right?
Against, you know, give me their schedule. Do you have their schedule?
I do. Saturday, March 21st.
No, I don't. Go further down. Give me a home game in like 3 months from now. Keep going. Yeah, like right here. Give me a home game.
July 5th.
Okay, Portland. Let's say Portland. Okay.
Okay.
Portland comes here. Well, the Timbers do great in Portland.
Right.
But Timbers aren't coming to Nashville. Okay, their fan base. So tell me what a Portland game 4 months from now, or right? 3-4 months from now does here. I don't know the answer. I'm curious.
I wonder how many fans will. I mean, it's not going to be the droves. Like, it's a, you know, Atlanta is drivable, right? It's still, they're still in the drug phase of, hey, this is like a drug, man. This is awesome.
Well,
I love our team.
I saw a lot of Atlanta fans walking the streets Saturday.
They absolutely had a lot of fans here, for sure. And
they
walked
in
front
of my
drivable,
car several
right?
times.
Portland is not drivable.
More on
but
Friday.
There will be some markets that are either drivable, or if it's a weekend game, maybe a batch of fans do say, hey, let's go to
– and that's
I've
the
never
other
been
part.
To Nashville before.
It's a
let's
Saturday
go
night
in
game.
There.
Right.
Yeah. So – I am just curious. This is a starting point. I don't think anybody says this is the bar. If you look at the attendance around the league, it all varies depending on how big the venue is, right?
Right.
They were excited about their capacity and everything. But a lot of these franchises have what Nashville is building, which is a smaller venue.
But a lot
of them
don't.
Create.
That's
a lot of them don't.
A lot of them don't. It's kind of a mixed bag. I was just looking through at the opponents for Nashville SC. So on April 26th, they play at New York City FC. Do you know where New York City FC plays? Mr.
No.
Met? City Field. City Field okay. is their home stadium. So
where do the Red Bulls play? Because their attendance
they
was
their
the
own.
Lowest over the thing. So they must have a smaller
I think they
venue.
Have their own. And then FC Cincinnati plays at Nippert Stadium, which is the University of Cincinnati. So,
yeah.
So their home stadium. I don't know how much that holds.
But that's a college football stadium. So that's a little
right.
bit bigger than, yep. say, Columbus, who has their own their own venue.
New England, the New England Revolution, play at Gillette Stadium, home of the Patriots. So same situation as the Titans, and then also or as Nashville SC, and then what was the other one I was finding? They play Seattle, which, you know, they play at CenturyLink Field.
But these are just the things we have to find out is, you know, when the weather gets warmer, too, like or when the spring sports.
It was cold Saturday night.
Yeah, when the spring sports end. In high schools, and you know, the Predator season eventually comes to
uh-huh.
an end. They're going to have, at some point, a window where they are the main game in town
no
besides
question.
The Sounds, right? And the Sounds is a difference. Sounds is an everyday thing. We know, that heartbeat is like an everyday thing. But how big of an event will home games be in, say, June, July, August, before football gets cranked back up?
Yeah.
That's intriguing to me. You know, how big could those events be, especially if the team is somewhat competitive? There's a lot of different things that I think we're all kind of curious to find out. But I was impressed. Like, I was driving from our morning skate coverage here, right? We come over Saturday morning for the Predators game against Colorado. We, you know, our broadcast crew gets our game plan together. And then I drive back over. And I'm already seeing people gathering, right? There's already people. I see flags and jerseys and scarves. You know, scarves are a big thing for the soccer fans. And then I'm coming back over the bridge because I live on the east side. And I'm coming over at 4 o'clock, and the parking lots are already getting going. You know, that game, I don't know what time they actually had the opening kickoff. 7:30?
I think it was around 7:30.
Somewhere there?
Because I know Marquise was over there in the tailgate area. And John Ingram was walking around. He got to talk to him. I was able to get him on the morning show, so good work by him. But I know that a lot of people, and I was getting a report from Marquise that there are a ton of people down there, you know, early in the day just anticipating. And, again, it's the first one. So,
that's what I was saying. Yeah. We're talking about something that we knew was going to happen.
But
they knew the first one would be good.
Tell me, they play, and the good thing for them is the bulk of their schedule is Saturdays and Sundays. That helps, but they do have Wednesday games.
Right.
So what does a Wednesday game in you know, June 26th look like? I don't know. I'll be curious
to
find out.
They don't have any. They're mainly Friday, Saturday, Sunday. But here's you want to see what it looks like in July. Fair question. I want to see what it looks like on March 21st for their second
home game. Their Friday game is like the beginning of the year, and there's like one or two of them. That's
right.
It.
Okay.
So they're all Saturday, Sunday games. Actually, there's one Friday game, and that's it.
I want to see what it looks like with the second home game. Do people, because I think that's important, because you have two away games in between. What does the record look like? Are people, you know, were people hyped up for game number one, and then, okay, it might tail off a little bit. But I want to see what it looks like on March 21st at 1 o'clock. That's a 1 o'clock game. And I think, I think the Preds are home that night.
They play that day. I know that. This is also something I'm curious about. We just have to let it sort itself out. I think there are a lot of crossover fans
sure.
between the Predators and Nashville SC that would have gone to both. Like, let's say one, if the soccer game was at noon.
I can tell you for a fact. I mean, I talked to Predators fans that I talk to a Barrel House all the time, and they said, because it's the first, I'm going to make the tough decision. I'm going to go to Nissan Stadium to take in the first.
Yeah.
Because.
Yeah. And yet you still had 17,000 people here. So, if there were no hockey game or if the soccer game was at noon and you could then come to the hockey game, would that have gotten it over 60,000? Maybe. I don't know.
The 21st is a prime example because Nashville SC plays at 1 o'clock. The Preds host Philadelphia at 7. So you can do both.
Now, that'll be a rare
interesting
day.
And I think there will be a lot of people that will do both.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people will do both on that day.
But I just think that it's very encouraging, the vibe that I'm getting about the following of the team. I think there's a lot of people that are super excited that this team is here. So the first year, you can live off of that, right? Then the next test is coming back every year, right? They'll get another.
No, I know, but, I mean, that's what I'm trying to figure out. So what is it going to be? I mean, it's not going to be 59,000 probably again this year. So what is it the rest of the way? I mean, it's a long season. So what are we talking about? Is it that they were playing games in, you know, at first Tennessee in front of 6,000? So is it going to be 6,000 over there? Is it going to be 16,000?
It's not
going
to be
26,000.
But it's not going to be 6,000 because it's major league as opposed to minor league.
I agree. Right. That's USL attendance.
Yeah, sure. It's like people when the Predators came, like, well, the Nashville Knights, they didn't get that. You know,
right. But what? Like totally but that's thing. What I'm trying to, like, what will it be? Will it be 26,000? Will that be their average? Well, I mean, I don't know. I'm curious to see how this looks the rest of the way and what the crowds, what do they average around? Because at some point we'll be like, it seems like about this amount is showing up for their home games.
I would predict it's going to be very, very good, I think, for this first year. Now, another question I have.
The average, though. Because I'm
going to say the average will be around, I don't know, I hesitate to put a number on it, but I'm guessing in my mind, I think they can average about 40,000.
Okay, well, if they
average 40,000 for the season?
Well, they already have 59,000. So for every game that they have 30, you still have 59. Yeah. And I think they have another game or two where they get over 50.
I would be quite impressed if they average 40,000. That would be really impressive.
Is that unrealistic? 35,000?
I didn't say it's unrealistic.
I don't think it's.
I would be very surprised.
But here's why I bring it up.
If they average 40.
Here's why I asked that question. Again, going with 59,000 as the outlier of it's the first game. But if the average is somewhere around 35 or 40, does that change the way of thinking? Because the proposed stadium that, you know, they're going to build at the fairgrounds is supposed to seat 30.
I hope not.
No, you can't. It's too, you can't.
Bigger
put the,
is not better. We've already gone down this. I don't
think you'd rather make better. It a tough ticket.
Oh yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
I don't think you can put the genie back in the bottle now. Anyway, yeah. You've already got the plan. Here would be my other question. The season goes deep into the fall, right? The season doesn't end August 29th.
No, their last game is October 4th.
October 4th.
That's the
regular
season.
Yeah. That's the regular season.
Yep.
Then the postseason goes another month, right? So when you get into late August and then through September, what do those games look like? You know, hopefully your fans, that the excitement continues on to the end if your season is still, you know, got something going on. But we know once football starts, the focus is the spotlight won't be on them as much. Naturally,
especially if DB12 is in town.
Well, yeah, that'd be
right. I mean,
regardless,
that changes. Well, it changes everything. I mean,
well, for this year, yeah,
right. I mean, that would. I mean, think
but
about
I'm thinking
training
more
camp,
long-term.
Everything.
I'm thinking long term. Like this is something they're going to have to find their place, right? As
sure,
football season gets cranking. Labor Day
How
weekend.
How do they handle a long playoff run by the Predators? Right?
Yep.
We know that
yep.
that will affect things.
Yep.
So you're right. I mean, they'll have to carve all this stuff out, and that's the beauty of building a fan base and building something, and that's the job at hand for them moving forward is building a fan base that can sustain things like what we're talking about. And how do they overcome that and have their own crowd and their own, you know, whatever that – I'm very curious to see what the number is. Willie, I hope you're right. Man, that would be incredible. If they average 40,000, I would be like, wow, what a success. I find that hard to believe. I just don't see it. I was thinking, honestly, 30,000 would probably be as high as I would go.
On an average.
On average. That would probably be as high as I would go.
Well, I think that – but when you have a stadium that seats 68,000, like, could you have one in the middle of the summer – where, you know, you market it and you get one that skews.
Well, do they have a game around July 4th? Because that could be a game.
Well,
you know,
I mean, I'm just thinking.
That's,
I'm thinking out loud
a July
here.
3rd or July 5th game, home game, you probably can get a big attendance for. In fact, let me look.
So, there, not every game would have 40,000. You'd have some where you have 30,000. So
July 5th here against Portland. That's a Sunday. Maybe you have a chance at a big-time crowd for that game the day after July 4th.
Time will tell.
Right? Well, it's a Sunday night game at that. Although I don't know how that would affect things. I wonder why it's a 6 o'clock start.
I do think a big factor, too, and you guys, we started this conversation off with it. Atlanta's right down the road, so they brought a lot. So
sure.
What will the visiting fans look like? You know, how many – because I can't give you a true gauge on just how popular this sport is around here without only seeing through the Nashville SC goggles. I mean, I want to know, like, are there people that have lived here, because we all know it's a melting pot and people have moved here, that came from other MLS cities that have held on to those loyalties that now they're going to show up. Plus, you have fans that travel. I mean, you know, Columbus.
Outside of Cincinnati is like the only –
I mean,
to
Seattle
me,
is that's
Cincinnati
across.
And Atlanta,
Kansas
maybe
City,
Columbus,
St. Louis, maybe DC,
Kansas City. I mean, really, you're going to come 10 hours?
Dallas, yeah, Philadelphia.
I just don't see those fans.
Portland, Salt Lake,
traveling
LA,
10 hours, 12
San
hours.
San Jose, Minnesota,
those
Houston.
That's far away,
yeah, but,
man.
Okay, but
Vancouver.
But when you're talking about a weekend trip, there would be people that fly in, not in droves, but
yeah, but Willie. Like, the Seattle Seahawks are as good a fan base as anybody in the NFL. When they come to Nissan, they don't put 25,000 in Nissan. Seattle Seahawks.
No.
Right.
Okay, so it's proximity does matter.
But it's relative.
It doesn't. It's not a reflection of their fan base, but it's just that's Chicago, tough to do.
The Chicago Bears bring a lot of people down here.
They do, a ton.
And you could drive, but that's a 7 or 8 hour drive. I would venture that most people flew down, fairly simple flight. I think you mentioned Philadelphia. I think that's a fairly common flight that you could get to come in. How many is that?
Right.
I don't know. It's quite, because there's room. It's a big stadium, right? You don't have to worry about getting tickets. Right? You'll be able to get tickets.
How many times have you talked to Toronto Maple Leafs fans that fly in from Toronto because they tell you, well, it's cheaper for me to fly here and get a ticket to an away game in Nashville than it is for me to get a ticket in Toronto?
Right, but that's like 1,000 fans, tops. So 1,000 fans football stadium isn't that big of a deal.
But that's for a weeknight game sometimes.
Right. There's some that you get more than that. I mean, whether it's – I mean, Chicago
and
is
it's
different.
There's a limited amount of seats available here. You have a vast football stadium where that it would be a problem finding space in the stadium if you wanted to bring a big fan base down for a weekend. I think we have to learn about the soccer fans. I don't know.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
What
you
makes
have
the
to
soccer
learn.
Fans tick?
Yeah.
Because I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think we won't know until we see it.
They call them support groups, the crazy fans. They were
– The roadies.
The like roadies. Yeah. Well, it's the roadies plus all the other groups that have united for this thing. That was a pretty special thing they had going there.
Yeah.
And that's why you come to the
Johnny Cash banner that they had?
Oh, you had that, and you had the guy, the Moses guy, right? Let my team goal?
Yeah, let my team goal. Yeah, it was great.
That kind of stuff, you can't put a price on that, right? That people just want to just come and be a part of that. It's fantastic.
All right, we'll come back more of Darren, Donnick, and Chase on the other side. I want to talk to all the men out there
to them.
I'm going to.
Talk
I've been
to
telling
them
for years about my friends over at Cool Springs MD, and they know a lot of you men have started to seek help for hormone deficiencies and imbalances. And Dr. Jeffrey Lodge is front and center on that quest of helping you, the board-certified physician over there. His wife, Daphne Lodge, the registered nurse, and their experienced staff want to give you men the treatments that are required to improve your quality of life. And as we all get older, I hope you want that. I know I do. And their services have already helped a lot of you here in the Middle Tennessee area and surrounding areas with your improving your immune systems, your energy levels, your cognitive function, and so much more. They're there to connect you with the medical care that you require to have a healthy and enriched life. There's no better time to achieve that healthy lifestyle than right now. What are you waiting for? Pick up the phone and make an appointment like I have. 615-283-7291. That's 283-7291. Or you can always go to their website and find and learn everything you need to know about them by going to coolspringsmd.com. back here on Darren, Donnick, and Chase live here at Pete and Terry's Tavern. What are you showing me? What is this saucer that you're showing me?
This is the Raiders' new stadium in Las Vegas.
Oh, my goodness.
My buddy Ricky is out in Vegas right now, and he just sent me these pictures of this huge
building. It looks like a big glass, a tinted window glass bowl.
Yeah.
Wow.
Thing is ginormous.
Do you know what capacity is?
I don't. I'm going to.
Is this a retractable roof or is it just a roof?
I think it's retractable.
It's kind of what I think too. Isn't everything? Isn't what
yeah.
They build them today, they're retractable roofs. Like the days of the dome are gone, right?
Yeah. Yeah, Allegiant.
Yeah, it looks like a retractable roof. Man, that place is sweet. What was the sweet price tag?
$1.84 billion. It looks like the capacity is going to be 65,000, expandable to 72,000. Soccer will hold 61,000.
That's a good number.
Yep.
It's a good number.
I think that expandable
honestly,
is always important.
Honestly, if we were to be lucky enough to have that conversation here, that's a good number for this market.
Yeah.
Like you said, 65, expandable to 72.
Right.
Hold 61 for soccer.
Yep.
I mean, think about that.
Yep.
Think about how close they would have been to a sellout.
Right. For that?
For that, right.
But, I mean, that thing. I thought you guys would enjoy that. It's a palace that they have built there in Las Vegas. So.
And they'll get to reap all the benefits from that, and now we'll be talking about a Super Bowl going there. Then we'll be talking about the Final Four going there. Then we'll be talking about a BCS championship game there. And, you know, I mean, that's how it works.
Yep.
You build it, they will come, especially in Las Vegas.
Vegas is going to have – they're going to have everything before the decade is out. They'll have baseball. They'll have an NBA team. And I've heard, too,
to me, like, baseball's – I just have to believe that's got to be next.
I think the A's.
Because the A's.
The A's will probably move.
The A's, they're the last tenant left in Oakland. That area that used to be, if you're not familiar with that area in Oakland, everything is jam-packed right there in one big, gigantic parking lot. The Raiders Stadium and where the Oracle, where the Warriors used to play, right as the BART, is that right? And it pulls right up there. Yeah, the train, right up to the stadiums, the arena and the stadium. But you've got the Warriors are in their first season in San Francisco. The Raiders are getting ready to start their new season in Las Vegas, and the A's will be holding on for dear life.
Yeah.
And I have to believe they're just –
they will be the Las Vegas Athletics before this.
If they were going to build them a new stadium, they would have done it. And it's just not going to happen. Their football stadium doesn't work. And I suspect probably Las Vegas will be responsible for two Oakland teams before it's all said and done.
And here's what Vegas has that we don't. They have the land because they're in the middle of the desert. So they can find a spot.
There's space.
And what I have heard is, you know, if they got the NBA, if the NBA expanded or a team moved there, they won't play at T-Mobile Arena. They'll get their own. They'll build another arena.
You get an arena. You get a stadium. You get an arena. You get a ballpark.
DeAndre Wilder and Tyson Fury, the third fight, announced already. But that fight was at MGM. It wasn't even at T-Mobile. Yeah. I mean, they have multiple arenas and, you know, would already consider building another one for an NBA franchise. Look, I'm telling you, they're going to have four or five sports. I mean, that says soccer. Are they getting MLS or is that next for them?
I suspect they're going to be. If they're willing to build everything, they'll get whatever they want.
Right. I mean, they have MLS has four teams that are announced that haven't started yet: Austin, Charlotte, Sacramento, St. Louis. So you got to figure Vegas will try and get in the mix at some point. But look, it's. It's expanding, but that I thought you guys would enjoy those pictures because that place is huge. It was a shell when I was there last year. I was there this time last year, and it was just a shell.
Just what, beams?
Yeah. I mean, you saw the outline of it and flying over it. You saw what it was going to look like, but Now they're close. I mean, they're going to be playing there this year. So they got until August.
Maybe TB wants to be there. I don't know.
Yeah. TB can go wherever he wants.
He can.
He can FaceTime, you know, but he's not FaceTiming John Gruden.
It's true. There's only one coach in the NFL he's been FaceTiming.
That is Mr. Vrabel.
And I was going to say the stash, but Teron informed us earlier the stash has been shaved off.
It has. Well, he shaved it off during the season, too.
Yeah.
So, but.
All right, we will come back and put a bow on Monday's show. Don't forget Predators in Edmonton tonight. Predators will be in Minnesota tomorrow night to take on the Wild. So one of five back-to-backs for the remainder of their schedule. And we will talk about that and more to close out Monday's show next on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Victor Arvidsson bobblehead night. Preds and Oilers. First 8,000 through the doors. Get down here. Get early. Get to your seats. It's going to be a fun night. Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl in the house. So with that being said, Willie, what are we in for tonight? Let's talk about this opponent. And let's talk about what the Predators are going to do.
Well, just take a look at...
It's going to be Pekka-Rinne.
Pekka-Rinne will get the start. His first in five games. Rinne made only four starts in the month of February. One of them was the nightmare in Vancouver, which nothing went right for anybody. The other three were excellent starts. He allowed two or less goals in those. Of course, he got sick last week. This will be the first time he's back in there since then. This is the first of five back-to-backs, so you figure there's going to be five times here that they're going to use Rinne in one game and Saros in the other. And you have a team in the Edmonton Oilers that now are coming off a big win, hockey night in Canada, came from behind and beat the Jets on Saturday night, flew here yesterday. That was good news for the Predators. I look at the Oilers as a pretty confident team right now, a little bit like the Avalanche, maybe not quite on the same level. The Avalanche, you could tell when you watch them play on Saturday that they just expected to win. They expected things to go right. Right now they're just in one of those situations where they're in a groove. They're winning every time, even if guys are out. The Oilers haven't been in the playoffs very much over the last 10, 12 years, right? So the spotlight on them is large right now. There's a lot of pressure. You have two amazing players. You got to get them to the postseason. So I think it's just another chapter in a tremendous string of games between now and the end of the regular season where the level of drama every night is really exciting. And that is why the Predators have this embrace the grind motto, because they know. Like, you can't come out and not have a good game and expect anything to go right. It takes everything you got every night. And tonight will be no exception.
But I feel like with this team, it's almost like the team of a few years ago when they were kind of in the same position of they know that night in and night out it matters, and they seem to play better. That's when, you know, that we always talked about when they faced adversity, they were good at that, and it's just they almost got away from that for a little bit, and now they've come back to it. So hopefully they keep up that mindset. But there is a definite difference when you talk to some of these guys. Darren, you've been in there and talked to some of the players just like I have, and we've commented on it. Like, something feels different. It feels, in a good way, feels different, you know, from similar to how it was, you know, maybe a year or so ago, that there's a belief in this team, and that whole embrace the grind mentality seems to be showing.
Well, I told you that one thing that I've noticed being in the room, and I'm not saying this is the reason that I'm seeing this. I'm saying I've just noticed it since the change. So is that a coincidence? Could be. Really could be. I've just kind of noticed a little bit of, like, the dynamic in the room. Just things that I'm seeing now, you know, as players, maybe I wasn't seeing before. And it just feels different what you were just saying. And I'm seeing players doing certain things, you know, maybe sticking around longer, whatever, joking, you know, just a little bit, feeling a little bit looser. Like I said, I don't know if this is because of John Hines or if this is a total coincidence, you know, that it's happened here in the last – I've noticed it in the last 3 weeks or so. But I didn't see that because some of this – these are some of the players that I'm talking about that I've talked about with you. I mean, they've been around through years and years of the last coach, and I'm wondering why does it look different now? Maybe nothing to it, but for whatever reason, it's a little bit different scene in the room, and I don't think it's a bad thing. I think it's a good thing. They just seem like and maybe everybody's on the same page. Everybody's loose. Everybody's feeling good.
Loose is a good word, everybody's but confident. In a good way. It's but not like too loose. Like you're not – you don't want to be wound up too tight. You know, not too high. You know, don't get too high. Don't get too low. Whatever cliche you want to use. That's kind of what they are right now. They're very even keel. They know that this is a tough sport. It's a tough league. You're not going to win every night. Just not. You'd like to, but you're not going to. That's just – but – how can you capitalize on your opportunities and maximize that?
I sense you're right. I think from the they've worked so hard to get their mental their mental focus right as a group, their mentality, their team mentality, their identity right. I think they feel much better about that part of it. Seven of the last eight games have been decided by one goal for this team. They've played in a lot of tight games. And they've had their share of success. I think they also know.
Because there's that pushback.
Yes.
That's the difference. The games that have been down two goals, they never could get back in. Like Saturday, they're down two goals. They wouldn't get back in. That ends up being a
4-0.
4-0, 4-1 finish.
Yep.
Right?
They've had way too many of those.
Yep.
But, yeah, I think they believe that the next play is going to go their way. I think they have a much better belief system. And at the same time, this is both encouraging and also, you know, a big part of the story. I still think they all believe that they can play better, right? And I think, quite honestly, to do damage in the playoffs, they'll have to play better than they've been playing.
I don't think that's, right? I don't think that's a crazy statement.
They have to play better.
Of course.
You know, you're not going to win every game that's decided by a goal. Sometimes you're not going to get the break. Well, that's what happened on Saturday. They got a bad break with a call that could have gone their way. But there, you could probably look back into these close games that are decided by a goal and look and find a play in the game somewhere where the other team's like, hey, man, we got a bad break. We lost by a goal. Somewhere in here, they've got to show some dominance, right? They need to have a game where Matt Duchene scores two and Ryan Johansson scores two or their lines get two. Right, and they just blow you out of the water. Somewhere in the equation, that's got to start happening some. I think they know that. It's encouraging. Like, think about what it could look like if that did start happening some. Right? They've gotten all the way to this point of the season, 60-some-odd games in, without that really ever happening, other than the first month when they were also turning around and giving up four or five goals on a lot of nights.
Yeah.
So that to me, it's encouraging that can you find that last gear?
Right.
If you did, holy cow, what would that look like? It wouldn't be. I think the team that they would
draw
in the first round would be like, oh man, I'm not sure I want to play those guys. That's what you want to get to.
Well, finding that last gear could be the difference of playing past the regular season end or not.
True.
Quite honestly.
Oh yeah, yeah. They might need to find that gear just to get to the playoffs, possibly.
Yep.
Yeah.
So that's what it is tonight, Edmonton and Nashville, 7 o'clock. It was 6 o'clock on Sunday. It'll be back to 7 o'clock start time tonight, 6 o'clock pregame. Everything right here on 102.5 The Game. That will do it for our show today. You have a great rest of your Monday, and we will be back at it tomorrow morning at 10 a.m., and we'll have lots more to talk about, just like today. Stay tuned. Jared and Joe, that's next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Closing time, open all the doors and let you out into the world. Closing time, turn all of the lights on over every boy and every